Hello and welcome to the Healthy Herb Podcast, a place of information and inspiration for the home herbalist. I'm Bridget Daugherty of the Solidago School of Herbalism, coming to you from a bridged island on the coast of Maine. In today's show, I'm talking about the roots of Halloween and herbs that I associate with Halloween and this time of year. Before we get started, I want you to know that I'm not a doctor, nor do I diagnose or treat people. What I share is based on my own experience and what I've learned from my mentors. Ultimately, I want you to be empowered in seeking and achieving your own version of optimum health. I want you to be inspired to connect and relate to the common plants that grow all around you. Together, let's make home herbalism be as common in the everyday household as cooking a healthy meal. Now, without further ado, let's have some fun and dig in. Today, I am excited that it's Halloween season, and I'm really looking forward to diving into some of the roots of this Celtic tradition of Samhain, which Halloween was kind of melded from, I would say, and also herbs that I really connect with the season and that seem like kind of witchy, Halloween-like herbs. I'll talk about a handful of them, including apples and mints and mugwort, garlic, elecampane. So we'll get into those. But first, I really want to just talk about Halloween and where this tradition, where this holiday derived from. And really, it has its roots in the Celtic Holloway Samhain, which is spelt S-A-M-H-I-N, Samhain, but it is pronounced Samhain. And it comes from the pagan times when people lived in connection with the land all around them for food and life. It was when small-scale agriculture was a way of life for most people, and especially for all common people. And it stems from celebrating the wheel of the year and the seasonal shifts and climaxes that occurred within that wheel. So most commonly, we know of the cross holidays of the Wheel of the Year, which are the solstices, which is when the sun is the most intense and the longest days, and the winter is the summer solstice, and the winter solstice on the opposite end of the wheel is the shortest days and the darkest days. Then we have the equinoxes, which cross in the opposite direction on the wheel, and those are the spring and fall equinoxes, which is when the light is about equal in the middle of, you know, equal day and night, both in the spring and the fall. Traditionally, or not traditionally, but currently, I think that a lot of people think of, you know, spring equinox as the first day of spring and fall equinox is the first day of fall, summer solstice, the first day of summer, and winter solstice, the first day of winter. But if we think about that, those are really kind of the climaxes of those seasons. You know, summer solstice, the most light that there is. Is that really when we start summer? And then from then on, the light starts to get shorter and shorter during the day? Or in my mind, and I think traditionally in the Wheel of the Year, summer actually began before the climax of the sun. And it actually was on the cross quarter holidays is when the seasons shift and change. So for the summer, we're looking at the beginning of May or Beltane, May Day, as really the first day of summer. And then solstice is midsummer, like a Midsummer Night's Dream, right? It's like the middle of summer. And then the end of summer would be the beginning of August, which is Lammas, or it's like a harvest time when the harvest season begins. So really, the holiday, the seasonal shifts were more in tune with the plants and how they grew. And so now we're at a cross-quarter holiday again as well, which is Halloween. Traditionally, it was Samhain, and this was actually the end of the harvest season, the end of autumn, the end of fall, and the beginning of winter. So it really did mark the start of the winter holiday, the start of the rest time. Samhain begins on the eve of October 31st. It marks the beginning of November. And from my understanding, Samhain is the name of the Celtic name of November, the Gaelic name, traditional name. It's how, so basically the whole month of November is Samhain. It's celebrated this transition time into winter for the 24 hours starting the eve of October 31st and going through till the midnight of November 1st. And it was really considered both the end of a year, the end of the growing year, the end of the life force of the season, and then, but then also with every end, there is a new beginning. So it's also the beginning of the new year. So it is now often considered or referred to as the witch's new year, because back in the time of the wise women and where pagan spirituality, earth-based spirituality was the dominant spiritual expression, this was New Year time. And then as now with the renaissance of pagan beliefs and the connection with the earth, we're back. I think we are returning to this understanding, or many people are returning to this understanding of the wheel of the year. Definitely works if you're in the northern hemisphere, and then things are opposite if you're in the southern hemisphere. And of course, the more north you are, the more drastic the shift is evident. So Halloween, Samhain, prior to that, was really a celebration and recognition of the end of the season of life. And the portal really represented this portal time into the season of death, or the entrance into winter, the start of the new year, the start of the next life, where things are really just like deep in the earth and resting and coming into conception once again and slowly taking shift and form and preparing for the spring rebirth and reemergence. This time is also seen as the time of the crone, where if it's the time of death, it's the time of the end of life. So it's the white hair of the crone, the white hair of the elder witch, and this time where we retreat into our homes or into our caves, or when life retreats into that symbolic uterus and begins to take form into something new. And so this portal is also often seen this time of year, and specifically the 24 hours between of November 1st is seen as a time when the veil between worlds is thinner. And in Celtic tradition, there was not just two worlds, there were actually three worlds. There was the world that we are all living in, working in, kind of known as the working world, the world of sustenance, and where we have to work for our well-being. And then there is the fairy world, the world of the fae folk, the world of nature spirits, so to speak, who can be pretty cool, but they can also be tricksters. And then there is the underworld, or the place of it where our ancestors rest and our past relatives. When the veil is thinner between these worlds, it's easier for us to connect with the other worlds and the spirits or the folks that are residing in those other worlds. And it's thought to be that when these veils are thinner, it's a time when divination or seeing the future, tapping in with our intuition, is easier and stronger. And so it's also a wonderful time that we can connect with our ancestors, nature spirits, and intuition itself. Samhain is also known as one of the bonfire holidays, these cross quarter holidays like Beltane, and which is the first day of summer, and Samhain, which is the first day of winter, were largely celebrated traditionally around bonfires, which were also symbolic for change and transformation. And fires, even in small form of a flame, can be also very helpful for divination, intention setting, and scrying. Historically, in Celtic agricultural cultures and pagan spirituality, Samhain really marked the end of the harvest time. After this time, people were no longer allowed in their fields. If there was any unharvested crops left in the field, it was to be left there and not harvested, or you would be potentially inciting the wrath of the fae folk, of the nature spirits, that whatever was left in the field is for them. And it is really a time to just stop after a very busy work season of agriculture, and harvest and food preparation and preparing for the winter survival. This was a time to finally rest and celebrate and maybe even get a little wild and just let loose a bit and have some fun. It was really a time to just celebrate all of the hard work, and now a time to settle into the winter cave. And then the transition from Samhain to Halloween, of course, happens over time, and it really coincides with a time when Christianity really was taking over pagan traditions and pagan spirituality, both subvertly and also violently. And that really came, they were really able to shift the traditions as long as they kind of kept some of the same traditions. So a lot of holidays that were originally stemmed from these agricultural societies and earth-centered, earth-based spiritualities were then shifted and changed, but still had roots and traditions that maintained. So it was easier to force people into changing their traditions, their spiritual beliefs and traditions. So this happens throughout all of the major holidays in Christianity, including this one. So from Samhain, they took it and turned it into All Saints Day. And All Saints Day, from my understanding, is basically a feast that celebrates all of the saints that don't have their own holiday. So it's just kind of like let's just take a blanket and throw it over Samhain and turn it into, we're just going to celebrate all of the Christian saints that don't have their own holiday. on this time. And then, so that's November 1st and November 2nd in Christian holiday is All Souls Day, which is a day when ancestors and people who have passed, people who have died are then celebrated. Some of the similar traditions and rituals were somewhat carried through, but just disguised to make it easier for the cultural shift to happen. And who knows, maybe it was also forced by the common folk at that time saying, yes, okay, like you're forcing us to believe your dogma, but we're still going to keep with our traditions, our cultural heritage, and we're still going to have some of our same rituals that we do, but we'll just call it something else. So unfortunately, a time, Samhain was a holiday that was once part of a culture where women and their families were revered and where witches were the wise women, the healers of the community. And then you can see when we celebrate Halloween, how that image of the witch has really changed. And it kind of comes from this time where then people who were the wise women of the culture were then told that they were wrong and that they were bad and that they were evil and that they were then burned at the stake, unfortunately, and tortured and killed. And so we can kind of see that symbolism has shifted from the wise woman to the evil hag, this wise ancient crone, this revered elder who now becomes this haggard, long-nosed, bony-fingered, green, evil person or creature. And there's some interesting thoughts on, you know, why, you know, what we see when we see that green witch with the long fingers and the long nose and the green skin, really could be a symbol of the plants, the plant people, the green world, and that long nose and those long fingers is just a sign of an elder. Really is interesting to just take a step back and watch how the symbolism shifts and how it forms a cultural story around, and in this case, especially wise women into evil, ugly hags. So I have this wonderful book, which I highly recommend getting if you are interested in herbs and herbal rituals. And this book is actually called Herbal Rituals by Judith Berger. It's a lovely, lovely book. And she goes, every chapter is month by month. And she focuses on one herb for each month and some really nice recipes and rituals that you can do to celebrate the turning of the wheel and the seasonal shifts. So I'm going to read a couple excerpts throughout this episode. But I want to read one now where she talks a bit about Halloween, and I just love her writing, and I think she really summarizes it all quite well. So this is in Herbal Rituals by Judith Berger. This is the October chapter, and the section is called Releasing. During the time when all humans participated in gleaning subsistence from the earth, the last day of October marked the shift from the agriculturally fertile seasons into those months where hunting served as the people's most immediate source of food. In the Celtic lunar calendar, this month was the last of 13 moons. The eve of the newborn year was called All Hallows' Eve, or Old Year's Night. Foods that continued to grow after Halloween were left in the fields. Farmers relinquished control of the land, releasing their claim on the fruits of the autumn harvest, offering all that flourished beyond this day into the divine domain of the goddess and god, as well as the ancestral dead, for those forces to use in their own way. The countryside folk held to the belief that through the whole month of October, as the lush face of the land faded into somber hues of gray and brown, and much green life became skeletal, the veil which separated the spirit world from the corporeal realm became thinner and thinner. On Halloween night, this transparency peaked, allowing the spirits of the dead to slip through the boundaries that screened them from the world of matter and fly over the earth, bringing whispers of warning and hope to their living relatives. The custom of masquerading and trick-or-treating arose to confuse prankster spirits who might be afoot this night, bent on tricking the naive or unprotected. If we imagine the strenuous, deeply physical work of planting and harvesting most folk engaged in from spring to late fall, it is no wonder that a mischief-making festival such as Halloween was created. It no doubt lightened the load borne by country folk during the earth's fertile months. Halloween also marks a momentous turn in the wheel of the year, the 24 hours of October 31st and midnight especially hang between the old and the new year, noosed by a slender tether to calendars calculated by those of rational mind. The day and eve of Old Year's Night belong neither to the land of the living nor the land of the dead, both to the time of endings and the time of beginnings, suspended outside of human-made concepts and laws. Intentions, declarations, wishes, and desires spoken at this time carry great power for both the secular anchors which fix our sense of time and the elemental laws by which we are bound are relaxed. On this night, what we ask, invoke, and name reverberates throughout all time and all worlds, initiating vast changes in our lives. Thank you, Judith Berger, for your eloquent words. I really love that this time can be a great time to set intentions as you retreat into the darkness of winter, retreat into the sacred space that you may create for the winter, and really think about what intentions or resolutions you want to set for this next journey around the wheel of the year. Is there something that you want to create? Is there something that you want to see come to fruition in the next growth year? And what can we do in the winter to prepare for that? What can we do in our creative mind or in our life that can create fertile soil for what we want to grow and prosper in the new year? So I'm going to get into some of my favorite herbs for this time of year, and herbs that really feel kind of extra witchy and Halloween-y to me. But first, I just want to put a little plug in for the Botanical Anthology, which you can get both in print and online as a digital issue, a digital copy. And this season's issue, it's issue 10 and volume 3, and it's autumn for 2024. The Botanical Anthology is really a beautiful publication that has, you know, up to 40 potential people who offer recipes and folklore and herbal tips and rituals and crafts of all that are plant-based and relating to the time of year and the season. It's really beautiful. I've been contributing to it for a while now. And so if you haven't already checked it out, I highly recommend. You can probably just Google Botanical Anthology. I will leave a link in the show notes. You can order a printed version on Amazon. And there are some really nice articles in here that relate to mugwort, which I'll be talking about in my herbal section of this podcast. So Samantha Barker has an article called Mugwort Poppets, which is a little sewn human figure that is stuffed with mugwort and can be used ritually. And then Susan Ilka Tuttle writes a beautiful article called Mugwort Smoke Cleansing Wands. And there's, you know, a pumpkin apple baked pasta in here by Jen Miller Swinsky. Elderberry Mead by Serena Hartwell. And I had an article in here of Goldenrod Sinus Tea. An Elderberry Zoom Syrup by Debbie Leavitt. Really nice array of some botanical recipes and treasures and crafts in here. Something for everyone. So check that out if you have a chance. All right, so let's get into some herbs for Halloween time. And I'm going to be talking about apples and apple-related plants like rose hips, hawthorns, some mints like sage and rosemary, mugwort, garlic, and elecampane were the ones that really came to mind for me. So let's talk about apples. I feel like one of the first plants or foods that I think of in Halloween time is the apple. It's kind of one of those classic fall foods, apple cider, mulled apple cider, fermented apple cider, apple butter, applesauce, apple picking. It's just a really nice traditional food for the season. And it really has been throughout time in the Northern Hemisphere. And it was a really important staple crop. And again, like connecting it back to Celtic traditions and during Samhain, you know, apples for people that really needed to survive and subsist on all of their own food that they grow and harvest and maybe share with their community, apples were a really important staple crop. And they could be cooked and concentrated to preserve and concentrate the nutrition in those various ways by, you know, turning it into apple butter or applesauce or apple cider, fermented apple cider. There are a lot of classic connections to the Samhain Celtic traditions that also you see carried through into Halloween celebrations. Traditionally, apples were hung from evergreen trees as offerings to the fae folk or for spirits or ancestors who may be coming back through the veil. And that was also seen as just a nice offering, just to appease them and keep them happy and as a gift. Apples were seen really as a sign of fertility and health, longevity, and romance. And there's a couple classic or Halloween traditions that were used to divine romance, as a divination tool as to, you know, what romance might be coming to you in the future. So during when the veil was the thinnest, during Samhain and then through Halloween, people traditionally would bob for apples, and they would actually score or write on the apple a first letter of a name, or actually a name of a man, and then or a woman, and then the people would bob for the apple, and supposedly the apple that you could actually get a grip of with, you know, bobbing for apples as the apples are floating in the bucket of water, and you tie your hands behind your back and you have to grab an apple with your mouth, and the one that you grab is going to foretell who you might marry or become in relation with. So this is probably obviously a game for the younger younger generations of people coming of age into romantic love. And then there was also a tradition where during peeling of the apples, you know, when people were making lots of apple butter and applesauce, if they were peeling the apples, the goal was to peel the whole peel without it breaking. And then if you were able to do that, you would then throw that peel over your shoulder, and whatever letter it landed to look like is the first letter of your future mate's name. A couple of fun little traditions. So originally this apple, this life-giving, nutritious symbol of fertility, also represented the goddess, because you could, you know, if you cut the apple and like as a wise woman or a witch's symbol, you'd cut the apple in half the fat way, and you would get, you would see the seeds look like a five-pointed star in the center of the apple. And this was thought to be a representation of the pentagram, which represents the four elements: fire, earth, air, and water, and then all bound by the fifth spirit. And it was really tied to these pagan traditions and celebrations and a symbol of the goddess. And then as we see again with this like shift of folklore from earth-based wise woman tradition to Christianity, that apple really becomes a dangerous, magically imbued, poisonous connection to the witch. So if you think of a witch, you know, in say The Wizard of Oz or Snow White, you know, they have this apple which is can cause harm, can poison, and was really kind of seen as an evil image, not only in those stories, but also the potentially the story of Adam and Eve. The apple is also often portrayed as the forbidden fruit. From my understanding, in that original story, the forbidden fruit is not depicted as any specific fruit, but as images and illustrations were made of that story, it was very often the apple that is shown as the fruit that Eve is tempted to eat, is given by the snake or the serpent, which again is another traditional symbol of the goddess and health and healing, and the spiral of life. And then that is also twisted into being an evil satanic messenger bringing this poisonous apple to this woman, who then takes a bite of it and then is taken out of the out of this divine realm of the Garden of Eden and brought into this world of suffering and illness and disease. And it's just a very strong symbolism and a way to change the story line through history. But I will say, you know, the apple, and even still today, you can see it has had this long connection with knowledge. Not only did it come potentially from the tree of knowledge, but also that it is a symbol that we often connect with education, with schools. You know, a teacher's gift is an apple. It's used a lot in logos for education, so to speak. So there is still some of that symbolism that underlies today as well. And then there's that wonderful phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. And I think that that probably in part ties to this fact that it was such an important food for health for people to get through the winter with. Now, there are a couple of herbs that are in the apple family that are close relatives of the apple that are almost like more concentrated, where apple is more this food and has a lot of sugars in it and this large watery fruit. And there are a couple herbs in that same family that are more concentrated, I would say, in herbal goodness and probably even in the bioflavonoids and the antioxidants, and that would be rose hips and hawthorn. Rose hips are a great herb for this time of year. Not only do they help support immune system function, but they're highly nutritious. And it's kind of like our native superfood, I would say. And any kind of rose hip will work. It's a very tasty remedy. Oftentimes is made into a syrup for just a nice immune tonic to get through the winter. Rose hips are really known also as a nice heart tonic, supporting the health of the heart. I personally like to make a nourishing herbal infusion of the rose hips. I think it's quite tasty. And so I'll buy, you know, a pound of dried rose hips is an easy way to do it, or you can harvest your own rose hips. You just have to be careful if they're the hips that have a lot of hairs in them, because those can be irritating to the throat. So dried rose hips, an ounce by weight in a quart jar. Fill the jar to the top with really hot boiling water and put a tight lid on it. So we would use a canning jar or a mason jar to do this with. And then let it sit for probably at least 8 hours and then strain it out and drink it. And it's a quite a tasty beverage. And it feels very nourishing. Or if you wanted to make a syrup, you could just basically simmer the rose hips into like a really strong decoction. So simmer, strain out the rose hips, and then add an equal amount of honey or sugar to your water. And that will help kind of preserve it, but you also, and sweeten it, but you want to keep it in the fridge. So I did a whole podcast episode on rose and rose hips. If you want to dive deeper into that herb, it was October 7th, 2021. And I will put a link to that in the show notes. Hawthorn, very similar remedy, very high in bioflavonoids, probably even more so concentrated in the hawthorn than the rose hips. Also really known as a wonderful heart tonic to strengthen and support the functioning of the heart. And again, it can be worked with, the berries themselves can be made into an infusion, but probably a decoction or a syrup you'll get more from. Also, a tincture is great, so you can take either freshly harvested hawthorn berries, which I think works well, although it's not as concentrated as the dry hawthorn berries that you can buy, and infuse them in 100 proof vodka. So if it's fresh, if you're using fresh berries that you harvest yourself, which you could probably still find this time of year unless the birds have already eaten them all, you can fill your jar with fresh, or fill your jar maybe a third full with the dried hawthorn berries, and then fill the jar all the way full with 100 proof vodka and let it sit for as long as you can, really. Minimum 6 weeks up to a year is great. Strain it out and then work with it daily for general heart health. I also had a podcast episode all about hawthorn, and that was more recent. That was February 22nd, 2023. A really nice fruit. So check out that podcast episode if you want to dive deeper into hawthorn. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And right here, I just want to give honorable mention. I'm not going to dive into it that much because I really don't have much experience in working with pomegranate. But it is classically, you know, a food herb that can, you know, is... I think Persephone ate half of a pomegranate when she was in the underworld, which kept her down there half the year and up here in this world, the other half of the year. But pomegranate is also a wonderful, highly antioxidant-rich food for the heart. And I believe it's also worked with a lot for prostate health as well. Okay, so this time of year, mints in general can still be growing. They can handle a light frost or even a couple light frost. A lot of mints can, not all mints. I mean, basil is a mint and that can't handle frost, but a lot of your classic like peppermint and spearmint can do pretty well during a frost. And really, all of these mint plants that are perennials really like to be cut back in the fall. So there's lots of, and usually they're very abundant. So there's always lots of mint to be working with this time of year, whether you're drying it for tea or making remedies with it. I think one of my favorite remedies to make with spearmint or peppermint is infusing it in honey. It makes a delicious honey that can easily be added to tea. You can just like leave the leaves right in the jar with the honey until you're ready to use them. And then you just take a whole scoop of the honey and the leaves and you put it in your mug and pour hot water over that, and it makes a really nice tea. And I haven't had any problems with keeping mint honey, you know, on the shelf, even not even in the fridge, for over a year before using it. And it's delicious and fine. And it makes a great tea, like for children, if they're sick or cold, or, you know, need something to either soothe the belly or ease a cough or help clear the sinuses. It can be really helpful for any of those things. So a nice mint honey or a mint tea can't go wrong. Couple mints that I would like to highlight would be sage, Salvia officinalis, not the wild sage that grows out west. That's an artemisia. But the Salvia mint, the sage that grows, is a garden sage, the classic cooking sage. It's a great herb for this time of year, you know, put in roasted vegetables or turkey stuffing or what have you. It's just a classic herb for cooking this time of year. But it also has a lot of medicinal value as well. It's actually known as, you know, the wise woman's herb. It's really known as an herb that can bring health and healing in a variety of ways, and just one that's always helpful to have on hand, whether it's dried for tea. And this is another one that I really like to make a herbal honey with, which is so soothing for a sore throat in the wintertime. And it has a lot of really fun folklore around it as an herb of wisdom. And I also did a full-length podcast episode on sage, and that's a February 10th, 2022 episode. So check that out if you want to dive deeper into sage, and I will leave a link for that in the show notes as well. Another thing I like to make is a sage blackberry shrub or oxymel. So if you take, you can take frozen blackberries and sage leaves, which again, sage will handle multiple frosts. You can still go out and harvest it well toward and into the beginning of winter usually. Put them in a jar together, the frozen blackberries and the chopped up sage, and then some apple cider vinegar and some honey, and let that all meld and macerate together. And it is a really delicious combination. And that can just be, you know, once it's sat for a few weeks, you can strain it out and add it to bubbly water as a fun beverage to have, or put it in marinades or drizzle it on pancakes or what have you. Rosemary is also closely related to sage, and is in the mint family. Rosemary is an herb that is really nice for this time. Again, it can really go through multiple frosts. If you live in a mild climate that doesn't really get below 20 degrees or get like really hard freezing conditions, it will overwinter. And you can use it year-round, or you can easily bring it in a pot and kind of have it alive throughout the winter. Rosemary is really known as an herb for remembrance. And this is an herb that is often burned as incense in ritual. It used to be strewn on the floors of cathedrals so that when you would walk on it, it would fill the air with its scent. It was traditionally worked with during funerals or memorials, really in a way of helping to remember ancestors or relatives who have passed. And so it's a perfect herb for this time of year for any sort of ancestral remembering that you want to do or honoring of relatives who have crossed over. It's also really known just like as a memory herb. So not only just remembering people from the past on a more ethereal level, but also in really enhancing brain function and helping people who are going through a lot of education that really need to have strong working brain power. Rosemary for remembrance. You can burn it. You can just smell it. You can make a pillow, a dried sachet with it, and put it by your bed so you can smell it as you go into dream state. Sage also can be burned in ritual, which is really nice. So either sage or rosemary are nice if you're doing some sort of Halloween fire or ceremony. Rosemary for remedy, I really enjoy making an oxymel with rosemary, which again is a honey and vinegar combination. So fresh rosemary chopped up and put in a jar all the way to the top if it's fresh, or halfway if it's dried, and then combined with equal parts of honey and apple cider vinegar. And let that sit for, you know, 2 to 3 weeks at least and strain it out. And then it can be really nice in salad dressings or added to bubbly water or marinades. And I also really like to put cranberries in with that as well. It makes a beautiful red color. You need to freeze the cranberries first, and then you can make a really fun holiday mocktail with it. And I did do a podcast episode on rosemary January 20th, 2021. It was one of my first episodes, and I did highlight rosemary in that. So you can check that out, and I'll put a link in the show notes to that episode as well. Mugwort, Artemisia vulgaris, is another herb that probably of all the herbs I'm talking about might be the one that I think most of for Halloween. And again, it's just a really kind of like, I feel like a highly spiritually imbued plant that can really help when the veil is thin to help us. I think it's mostly the scent of the herb that really kind of sets the brain into a different state and really helps us access our subconscious better, potentially our intuition more, definitely dream states. It's worked with a lot in dream pillows, just the scent of the herb to really kind of keep us in a aware state as we transition into a different mental state, a more subconscious, intuitive state. So again, mugwort or cronewort is another name for it, a common name for it. Artemisia vulgaris, the common Artemisia. grows wild so easily. It's still harvestable right now. Even after multiple frosts, it's quite hardy. And it can be dried to smoke, to inhale itself, or to just use as an incense smoke. Use it in sachets, dream sachets. It's quite bitter, so it makes a really nice digestive tea as well to help with digestion. And I think one of my favorite podcast episodes that I've done so far, it was the one on mugwort or cronewort, and that was from September 2nd, 2021. And I think that there's just so much lovely folklore around this plant. And one interesting thing that I came across when I was doing research for that episode is that it is one of the plants that still growing today that has some of the oldest roots. It's like one of the most ancient plants since the glacial ice age. It was kind of one of the first plants, from what they can tell, I guess, to have popped up since then. And you can tell, I mean, it takes over. It's strong. It is a hardy plant. You got to be careful where you plant it, but it is a lovely plant to have around. So that episode was September 2nd, 2021. Check that out. I think you'll enjoy it. And I'll leave a link to that in the show notes. Garlic, another classic herb for this time of year. Not only are we planting it in the ground this time of year, but we can be putting a lot of it in food or making maybe a garlic honey. Infused honey is a really nice way to preserve this herb and work with it medicinally. And then, you know, we think about vampires and this time of year and going into the darkness and colds and flu season, and garlic is just, it's there. It's there to protect us. It's a very protective plant, both against vampires and against bacteria and viruses. So garlic for Halloween, absolutely. And again, I have a full podcast episode on garlic, February 3rd, 2022. And I also really like that episode. I really kind of get into the history of what is the connection between garlic and vampires, and where did that all stem from? So if you want to learn more about that, check out that episode, and the link will be in the show notes. And then elecampane, I was trying to think of a nice root that I like to work with this time of year, because really all roots are great for this time of year. Lots of medicinal roots out there, and this is the prime time to start harvesting them once all the parts of the upper parts of the plant have died back, and this is when the roots are really starting to store up lots of sugars and starches to get through the rest of the year. And all of that life force and nutrition that the plant created in its aerial parts, the parts above the ground, are now concentrated back into the root. And elecampane, one of my favorite roots, a wonderful remedy for the cold and flu season, especially for deep-seated coughs. I need to dig some up because I've already used all of my remedies from the past of elecampane. And it's a great herb. You can harvest just a portion of the root, so you don't have to kill the whole plant to harvest the root and to make medicine with it, which I love. And I really like to infuse the root in honey, or to make an oxymel where I infuse it in vinegar and honey, or to make a tincture with the elecampane is also really great. So I also have a full podcast episode on elecampane, which I also is another one of my favorite episodes. I just love the folklore behind this herb. And so that episode was July 29th, 2021. So if you have elecampane in your garden, or if you know of someone who does, or if you can get a line on some dried elecampane, it's definitely an important herb to have on hand for the winter cold and flu season. Okay, so dive deeper into those other podcast episodes. Really dig into those herbs if any of them interest you. I would love for you to listen to some of my older podcast episodes. So now I want to get back to Judith Berger in her wonderful Herbal Rituals book. And she has a great little section on roots and a really lovely perspective of plants as they move into this time of year, the time of death and winter. So I'm going to read from her book, Herbal Rituals, and this is still in the October chapter, and this is the section called Rooting. Rooting. The icy exhalation of the crone rings the moon in an iridescent glimmer and brings a sudden first frost, which alerts the green nations to the hovering winter. Overnight, the life force of the plants plummets below ground, deserting the topside world and traveling the labyrinthian pathways of roots and rhizomes, which form the map of the underground. As October unfolds, our green allies focus the source of their nourishment away from the sun, rain, and air toward the earth, fattening their roots with minerals and starches pulled from the plant's uppermost parts, the earth and the water in the soil. Unlike the mobile, wind-borne nutrients of carbon dioxide and sun radiance, which the plant catches by offering a large, above-ground surface area of stem, leaf, and flower, the nutritive mineral salts below ground are still. In order to suckle this underground food, plants develop elaborate mazes of roots, their generous girth offering more body surface to the touch of the soil. In this manner, the roots directly absorb nutrients from the earth through the contact of their root skin and root hairs with the ground. In addition to its absorptive capacity, the root anchors the plant to the ground, holding it firm in the face of storms and protecting its life in situations where the exposed plant body is torn and destroyed. In the warmer months, the root of the plant also acts as a bridge, conducting nutrients to the stem of the plant and the inner bark of trees. In October, as winter looms, roots also serve as a storage chamber, preserving food for the plant's dormant period in the form of starch. For the herbalist, October and November are optimal months for garnering potent physical and magical root medicine from the plants, as well as harnessing starches and sugars, which keep us nourished through green slim winter months. Thanks again, Judith Berger. So I invite you, you know, it doesn't have to only be on Halloween or Samhain, November 1st, October 31st. It really could be throughout the month of November to really dig in and think about what are we bringing into our winter den? What are we bringing into our creative space so that we can offer something to come into fruition in through the spring and summer months? What intentions do we want to start and set for the new year that is upon us? Can we be like the plants that slowly die back from our summer manic ways and come into our innermost parts, our deep, dark selves? And what can we find there? And what can we allow to percolate there so that when the spring months come, we're ready to put forth new parts of ourselves? I think for myself, what I'm focusing on and working on is tapping back in or getting a better sense of how to work with my own intuition, learning to trust it, finding ways to listen to it and believe it, and find ways where I can allow it to guide me in better ways. After coming through a really hard couple years where I really felt like I was ignoring my intuition and not believing it and pushing it aside and pushing it aside until I couldn't ignore it anymore, and having this happen multiple times, I really am looking for ways and developing ways to ground back in and trust myself and trust my gut, so to speak, to trust my womb energy and to pull on my ancestral DNA to help guide me into my future. So that's what I will be working on among this podcast and some other ideas that I have brewing as well. If you have interest in hearing me talk about more herbs in a different way, I just would like to invite you to check out on Herb Rally's YouTube station. There's a section or a bunch of videos that I created for them on nourishing herbal infusions. And I think that there's at least 3 hours of content there, divided up into a lot of different videos where I cover 9 different herbs and also different practices of how to work with them. And just really talking about the one herbal preparation of nourishing herbal infusions and how to work with those. So you can check that out. I would love for you to check that out. Give a shout out in the comments. I have also just recently given Mason, who's in charge of Herb Rally, the creator and of Herb Rally, a video where I answer some questions that people have commented on the videos with. So stay tuned for that. That'll be coming out on his YouTube station in the near future. And I really would like to thank you all so much for listening to the podcast and for sticking with me, even when I, you know, have had to take some breaks. Summer was a super busy time of year with gardening. It feels really good to be slowing down as the plants start to retreat and to really get back into sharing some more herbal information with you and inspiration. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Healthy Herb Podcast. I would be so grateful if you would rate and review it on your podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and even share it with a friend. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook, or send me an email at solidagoherbschool@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. Let me know if there's any topics that you want me to cover. Until next time, be well, let intuition guide you, and have fun with herbs.